Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Paranormal Down Under. This is Dr. John over here in beautiful, sunny Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, which is not so sunny right now. It's cold, but that's okay. And Jackson Samuel from Australia, where it's hot as it can be. How are you doing tonight, Jackson?
I'm doing well there, Dr. John. It's a lot warmer here than it is over there, I guarantee you right now.
I'll bet it is.
Yep, we've had a lot of stuff going on here lately. Like, we've got bushfires all over the country. We've got floods. We've got farms getting inundated. There's so much going on down here at the moment. It's quite incredible.
Wow. Well, I hope you survive at least till the end of the show, if not longer, can keep doing.
I shall certainly endeavor that, my friend.
It's just a lot of fun. Really good to have you on here. I wanted to start out with an announcement. It's a cool announcement because we have a group of podcasts. And one of those is ScaryCast, which is on our Thursday night at 11 p.m. last night. Of course, you were on there with us, and we had Jen Cruz of the She Squatchers and Devin Tate from Hollywood with his new single. And Papa Stroh was there. We had a blast. And I briefly announced last night a major guest for in about 3 weeks. And I wanted to tell you and everybody else down there a little bit more about him. I want you to be sure to tune in on March the 7th in ScaryCast. And, of course, Jackson, I'll invite you to be with us and call in and talk. And we're going to have Lyle Blackburn. Lyle is a good friend.
Oh, really? That'd be great.
Yeah, he was our featured guest at the Fan Festival. He wrote, of course, the book. He did all the investigative reporting for Lizard Man, the true story of the Bishopville Monster, which has a place near and dear to my heart. So I'm glad that Lyle's going to be able to talk to us. He is going to be releasing that week on March the 5th, and I'll have more information on it, Momo, the Strange Case of the Missouri Monster. Now, I don't know about you, but I think Momo might be a Bigfoot. I don't know, but we'll see. Lyle is going to be telling us on March the 7th, so it'll be a lot of fun. He'll be releasing the book on March the 5th, so we'll be, I think, the first podcast he'll be on. So it'll be very exciting, and we might just do a double broadcast there, broadcast it on Paranormal Down Under as well, because I just think everybody's going to be excited. Lyle is the guy that wrote the books Beyond Boggy Creek and The Beast of Boggy Creek, about basically, I think it's a Bigfoot, and Boggy Creek is an area of Arkansas in the United States, right in the middle of the country.
Oh, most definitely. Look, I have seen the original Legend of Boggy Creek. I mean, that was one of the original movies and things that first got me into, yeah, like, that bloke is an absolute legend.
Oh, I know. So, yeah, he's a legend, and he's going to be on ScaryCast, and we'll probably broadcast the whole thing on all three of our paranormal podcasts at the same time, Bigfoot and Company, Paranormal Down Under, and, of course, ScaryCast. They don't get any more interesting or any nicer than him. He's great, and thanks a lot, Lyle, for letting us do the first podcast interview after the release of Momo. And we'll find out all about Momo. I'll hopefully have some photographs, and I'll put those up on the web, and folks can see it. And then, of course, everybody go buy Lyle's book and support him. I hope we're going to have a great time with him. So that's my big announcement coming up. Of course, we recently had in Charleston, South Carolina, now for your folks in Australia, Charleston, South Carolina is just a little south of me. I'm in Myrtle Beach, and I am in kind of the middle of the East Coast. And if you draw a line straight down about 2 hours, to the coast through South Carolina. That is Charleston. It's the oldest, one of the oldest cities in America. Lots of ghosts, lots of really crazy stuff. And actually, it was this past Tuesday, I got a phone call from a friend of mine from a television station. He said, John, we can't report this because we don't have any pictures. All we have are some reports of folks that heard about this and saw it. And they called into one of the radio stations and called in the police. But there was a Bigfoot. People reported seeing a Bigfoot walking right alongside Interstate 26, going headed straight into Charleston, South Carolina, maybe about 20 miles from downtown Charleston. So it was very interesting. We haven't gotten any further reports about it. I put that up on a number of websites. I think a lot of people heard about it, got a lot of likes and everything. So we're just waiting for a little more information from the police and some investigative reporting, and we'll be telling everybody about that. So that's what we got going on here in the Myrtle Beach area. We got Lyle coming on, and we had a Bigfoot sighting, a major Bigfoot sighting here Tuesday of this past week. So we're talking about three full days ago. So, you know, Jackson's really interesting times around here, and I wanted to share those two things with everybody. And so what's going on with you? I'm gonna turn it over to you for a bit.
Okay. Things have been looking up here down under, as we call it and as you know it. since we put paranormal down under online and everything, I've got a lot of interest, a lot of interested people here in Australia that have had things go on here and are very interested in America. Like, I'm sure that there are as many Australians here interested in what's going on in America as Americans are interested in what's going on in Australia. So what I'd like to actually put to you is, how long have you been interested in the Lizard Man? Because I heard you bring him up earlier. What evidence have you come across, and what brought you to bring around the Lizard Man Festival? Because I know you run the Lizard Man Festival every year, and I'd just love to know, like where you found your love for the Lizard Man, and what basically gave you the idea to bring up a festival.
All right. It may take me a couple minutes, but I'm going to tell the whole story to everybody down under, okay? And it's a neat story. I was on a podcast that I run. It's now called Pop Culture Stars. And we had a fella that we were talking to that was putting together a documentary. This was in August of 2017. And he said, you know, by the way, it's interesting that the 50th anniversary of the Patterson-Gimlin footage of Bigfoot over there in California is coming up in about 8 weeks. And we're all excited about that. I said, wow, I am too. So we kept talking on the podcast, and while we were talking with him, I went to my favorite little internet domain name site, and I registered BigfootDay.com and TennesseeBigfootConference.com. And so I did a little bit of looking to see where I might find a nice, friendly state park or city park up out in, kind of in the mountains of Tennessee. I found one called Bays Mountain Park, and I sent him a deposit. Now, this is all while we're still interviewing this fellow. So 30 minutes after he mentioned to me that we were going to have the 50th anniversary of the Patterson-Gimlin footage, legendary footage of Bigfoot over in California, I said, well, as we close the show down, I'd like to announce the first annual Bigfoot Day is going to be in Kingsport, Tennessee at Bays Mountain Park. And it was like October 19th, 20th, and 21st, because the 20th, October the 20th, 2017, was the 50th year anniversary of the Patterson-Gimlin footage. So I mentioned that, and everybody said, wow, this is great. Next day, I got on the phone, called up Bays Mountain Park, found out they were extremely interested in holding Bigfoot Day there, because they know about a lot of sightings in the Kingsport, Tennessee area. That is right up in the mountains, right across the state line from North Carolina. So I had 8 weeks to put it on. We had 30 vendors. We had talks all day for 2 days. It was a blast. We had a lot of fun, and a lot of interesting things happened. Met a lot of new friends. We had about 400 people come in for that event. Bays Mountain Park was, of course, very happy. And so as I was leaving that evening on Sunday evening, I spoke with the park manager, and he said, well, now, we'd like to invite you back because you had a really good event. And I said, wow, thank you very much. I can't wait to come back. So after that weekend, the 19th, 20th, and 21st, so on Monday morning, the 22nd, I'm riding down the mountain, and I drive through Columbia, South Carolina, and I get about 45 minutes outside of Columbia, and I look, and there is one of our big state highway signs, and it says Bishopville 15, Highway 15. I said, oh my goodness, we don't have a Lizard Man Festival. No. Lizard Man is very famous in the area. In 1988, 1989, and 1990, Lizard Man caused a lot of havoc in the Bishopville and Lee County areas, which is about 45 minutes outside of our state capital. And, of course, we all know about Lizard Man, but I just thought, God, it'd be great to have a Lizard Man Festival. So one thing led to another. I spoke with some of the folks in town. They liked the idea. We put it on. That was in October when we met. And then the Lizard Man Festival happened on June the 2nd the next year. It had 700 people. I mean, people were excited. And the minute that we opened the doors, I knew that the place that we had was just not big enough. So after the conclusion of the festival, about a week later, I said, well, we got to do better. We need more space. So I had met the folks at the Button Museum, the South Carolina Button Museum. In fact, you can go to the website. I just put that up for them. It's scbuttonmuseum.com. And Mr. Stevens, one night when he couldn't sleep, started sewing buttons on a pair of blue jeans. And 1.5 million buttons later, he had covered a sports car. He had covered a hearse in buttons. He'd covered a casket in buttons, several guitars, a couple of suits. And about that time, he started making the talk show rounds. It was one of the most unique accomplishments anyone had ever done. So I met the folks. I met Fran Crowley, who's his daughter, and I met James, his son. And I just went out to him. I said, you know what? I need a bigger place for the Lizard Man Festival. Can we hold it out here? And 5 seconds later, the answer was yes. It was wonderful. They're nice people. We're getting vendors already. We're going to be, our festival this year is going to be on May 31st and June 1st outside of Bishopville, South Carolina, just a couple miles out in the country at a wonderful place. And so the Lizard Man Festival started because I happened to look at a road sign and I said, gosh, we don't have a Lizard Man Festival. How can we not have a Lizard Man Festival? So I started doing research and everything into it. And, you know, that was one thing. But when we got to the first Lizard Man Festival, I must have had 20 people tell me stories that I wrote down about the Lizard Man, how their family had seen it or they had seen it or their friends had seen it. And it's just fascinating. Too many people saw something during the summer of 1988, 89, and 90. The frenzy, the publicity frenzy was so huge that one Monday morning, ABC's Good Morning America show showed up in the swamp on the highway looking for Lizard Man. It was a nationwide phenomenon. And then after 1990, it kind of died down. It died down nationwide, Jackson. Now, it didn't die down there in Bishopville and Lee County, because people kept seeing the Lizard Man. And I've got a lot of stories. I've got some of them in my book, Lizard Man Festival Coloring and Storybook. Second edition is going to be coming out here very shortly. I'm going to be adding some of the stories that I found out. And so Lizard Man is a little bit more than just a phenomenon that came and went. people have been hearing things since the dawn of time in Bishopville out there toward that swamp. The Indians talk about it. Everyone's grandparents and great-grandparents mentioned the lizard people of Lee County. So it's something that's been going on. Now, Lyle Blackburn did a great job of investigative reporting, interviewing folks that were still around about Lizard Man, about the sightings in the late 80s. But what happened is there has always been something out there destroying people's property, tearing trees up, ripping trees out of the ground, pulling fences down, and everything. Now, if you look at Lyle's book, Lizard Man, The True Story of the Bishopville Monster, you will find that about half the time, Lizard Man is a dark green in color, a lot like a lizard. But about half the time, Lizard Man is covered in dark brown fur.
Well, yeah, that's really interesting.
I asked Lyle, and Lyle said, you know, John, I don't know what to tell you, but it seems like sometimes people were seeing something like Bigfoot. I don't know, but everybody called it Lizard Man, but a lot of those stories that I have seemed like people were talking about Bigfoot. Now, you and I had discussed about the Bunyip that there were times when people saw it and it was green and had scales, and other times it had hair and dark brown hair. So I don't know, but we've got evidence of the same type of sightings. One's a hairy creature and a scaly green creature, something similar to Lizard Man down there in your neck of the world with the Bunyip. So, I mean, it's interesting. We have similar sightings. What do you think?
That is so true. Yeah, that is so true. Like, a lot of the sightings down here say that, the Bunyip has scales. Sometimes it's green skin, as you have said. So it has fur. Sometimes it's said to have the horse, sort of a body like a horse and a head of an alligator. Tusks like a boar. The one that we have here, like, stories have been told that it comes up out of the water and basically wrestles you into the water and then drowns you. Do you have any stories like that over there?
Well, I happen to. Let me give you a little bit of background. Well, yes, I do. In fact, this is a story that I have not told. I don't want to write it down, and I'll explain why. First of all, when does the Lizard Man appear over here? I spoke with a fellow who does logging in the swamp. Now, around these swamps, you can cut down trees as long as you have a permit, or you can drag logs out of the swamp and make beautiful furniture out of them. These logs have been submerged 10, 15, 20, even hundreds of years. So there are folks that are swamp loggers. And this fellow was telling me that people tend to have seen the Lizard Man. He heard stories about the 30s, the 1930s. And he said, what happened back then, it was very, very hot. And it was very dry. And he said the same thing happened in 1988 and 89 and 90. Now, what happens is when it's hot and very dry, the rivers dry up. Now, rivers normally flow out to the Atlantic Ocean here. But when they dry up, the salt water pushes itself up toward the center part of the state. And the two times that he's aware that there have been Lizard Man sightings are during those periods. It's like the Lizard Man likes fresh water, and he is kind of pushed up from a little farther toward the coast, more up toward what we call the Midlands or near Columbia, South Carolina. So that's a phenomenon. that that he has noticed. The second thing that I wanted to mention is it was hot in the mid-1990s around here. It was very hot and very dry. And this is a story.
Okay,
it's a very sad.
So there'd be a lot of salt content.
That would, you know, if there was a lizard man that liked to live, you know, farther away from Columbia toward, you know, down in the swamp toward the Atlantic Ocean, it kind of would push a lizard man creature, as we describe it, close up the center of the state. Now, this is a very sad story. There were two young boys. One was 17 and one was 18, and they were from nice, wealthy families up near the Charlotte, North Carolina area. It happened in early fall, so it was still very hot and very dry. They had had some drinks. They were partying with some friends, and they decided that they wanted to go watch the sun come up in Myrtle Beach, 4.5-hour drive minimum. Now, you know, probably not the smartest thing in the world for a 17, 18-year-old boy who had been drinking, but that's what they decided to do anyway. And they took off, and they even called their friends from a couple hours away and said they were having a good time and looking forward to getting to Myrtle Beach and watching the sun rise, and they were drinking on the way. They were never heard from again. Saturday came and went. Their parents never heard from them, even though they may have been partying. They would have called their parents. They were what we call good kids. Nobody heard from them by Sunday. Both sets of parents called the police, and they had an all-points bulletin out for those boys. They checked every hotel in Myrtle Beach. Those boys had not checked into a hotel early Saturday morning. They'd left on Friday evening. They had not checked into a hotel. Started a statewide manhunt for these kids. They knew that they had come down our Interstate 77 from Charlotte to Columbia, which is in the middle of South Carolina, and they would have presumably taken Interstate 20 from Columbia to go toward Myrtle Beach. That would be the standard way that they would have gone to Myrtle Beach from the Charlotte area. So what happened was they walked, the authorities had groups of people, volunteers and staff members, walk all the way from Charlotte down to Columbia, looking on both sides of Interstate 77. They didn't see anything. They got to Columbia. They started walking toward Myrtle Beach. They walked all the way to Florence, South Carolina, and then walked on State Highway 501 all the way to Myrtle Beach. Never found them. That took about 2 weeks. They were looking on the left and right side of the highways, because that's where they might have landed had they had a wreck and flipped and gone over, because it's fairly swampy, especially from Columbia all the way to Myrtle Beach. Well, somebody had the bright idea with the Department of Transportation. They said they're not on the land. They have somehow gotten into some water and they've drowned. So what they did was, the boys had called and they had pinged a cell phone tower near Columbia, South Carolina. So they decided that they would start looking in Columbia and again, start walking the interstate highway system. But instead of looking on land, they would start looking in all the bodies of water. As soon as they got outside of Columbia, South Carolina, once you hit about the 20-mile mark, you start coming across swamp. The first area is called Lake Wateree, named after the Wateree Indians. And they were at mile marker 94 miles from Myrtle Beach. And there was this creek called Buck Creek that came out of Lake Wateree. So several of them walked down the embankment from the bridge. And lo and behold, they saw the bumper of a car, and it had the correct license plate number. They got everybody rushed down there. They started looking, probing into Buck Creek, which is about 8 feet deep. They had poles. They had lights. They brought out a boat, and they found that sports car turned upside down in Buck Creek, and the two boys were in there. They were dead. This was about 2 weeks after they had left from Charlotte that night to go to Myrtle Beach. Now, there are some complications. First of all, the car was turned upside down. Second of all, it was impossible for that car to spin out of control and go down the embankment into Buck Creek, much less flip over. And they found some tire tracks about, 300 feet away where a car had pulled off the road. They hadn't thought much about it when they were looking on either side. There are two bridges over Buck Creek. And all of a sudden, everything started coming together. And the only way that a car could have gotten down that embankment and into that creek would have been for a crane to have lifted it up and dropped it in there, or something picked that car up. It was a very, very light sports car. And something would have to have picked it up and carried it down that embankment and dropped it upside down into that creek. Now, I can imagine the following, because that incident occurred about 20 miles from the Scapoor Swamp in Bishopville, where lizard man sightings had been seen about 7 and 8 years ago. So I can imagine that the boys had been drinking beer, that they had to be excused. So it was dark, or it was maybe a moonlit night. I think it was, a moonlit night that they said. And they got out in that middle median between the east and west branches of the highway. They got out to use the restroom there, and right on the interstate, and they looked up, and there was probably an 8-foot tall lizard. And I think if you look and see a creature like that, and you're on the ground, and there's your car, you probably know that you're not going to be able to run away from that dude. So you probably jump in your car, start it up, but by that time, something that's 8 foot tall, all muscle, will have picked that car up, toted, as we say in the country here, it would have toted that car on its shoulders and dropped it into the creek, walked down and dropped in the creek because it was in a bad mood. Now,
most definitely, something that big, that could easily outrun you and easily flip
exactly
your car and do
so
anything
you
wanted to do.
Yeah, you just want to get in the car and pray. So now I asked several people in that area that were around back then. I said, I'm not trying to be disrespectful. And I know there are two families in the Charlotte area that lost two sons, not even in the prime of their life, 17 and 18. They were just starting their lives, and they lost their two kids. So I didn't want to make an issue of it. But two people actually told me something. I said, here's what I think happened. And both of those folks said to me, that's what we all thought. But nobody wanted to put that in the paper. It would have just caused a stir. Can you imagine saying boys found at the bottom of a river, we suspect lizard man did it? I mean, can you imagine the commotion and the craziness that would have caused? It wouldn't have done anybody
away. Yeah. There is no way that they could print something like that.
No, but I've got a picture of the car when it came out. And I have spoken with the reporter who covered that story. He's a friend of mine. And I said, what do you think about my story? He said, I can't comment. Well, that's enough for me. There's certain things that just can't be reported. And so while people have said lizard man's a vegetarian, never caused a problem, I think lizard man could have gotten mad, could have taken those boys and dropped them on their heads in Buck Creek. And no comments about anything from anybody, but two folks that I know that said, we believe your story. We all thought that back in 1996. And so that's about 12 years ago, 13 years ago, 12 and a half years ago, exactly. So it made me understand that, you know, when it was hot, when it was dry, they provoked at about 5 o'clock in the morning, a lizard man or some creature that dropped them into a creek. And you can't even drive down there. You cannot drive down there because there's a fence that would keep your car from going down there. We have those all throughout the United States. We have whenever there's a bridge over a body of water, they make sure that you can't drive down there so that something like that couldn't happen. So that's my very sad lizard man story that a lot of us believe happened. It has been, and Lyle had not heard that story. I guess I was fortunate that I did some research and found out about it. And so there you go. There is my lizard man story, or my bunyip story, or whatever we want to call it. But something happened to those boys that night. And I don't think that it was all their responsibility. I think they may have been guilty of being in absolutely the wrong place at absolutely the wrong time. And you know, Jackson, if you're at the wrong place at the wrong time, that can be the end of you.
Most definitely, Lockhart. You remember me telling you about my story about when I was staying with an old childhood friend about 17 years ago, and we had an encounter up at a farm bales, and the water tank got pushed off its stand, and we had two pigs taken and a few lumps of wood thrown at the cabin.
Why don't you go into that story a little bit more? Because that's a story from, I've told a story from the States. Why don't you tell a story now from Down Under? Because I think folks listening to Paranormal Down Under would enjoy that, and so would people from the States or where else in the world they're listening to, because we have listeners. I can tell you that we have listeners all over. We seem to have a lot of listeners from Iceland, Norway, and Scandinavian area. We seem to get a lot of listeners from those areas, so I'm sure they'd really like to hear your story. Please illuminate.
Definitely. Well, I can actually do even better than that, Dr. John. I've actually got my friend here that had the cabin that I went and stayed with, and he'd like to say hello and tell you his side of the story.
First of all, hello, friend of Jackson's. This is Dr. John.
Hello, my name's Shane. How you going?
Doing great. Thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate it, and love to hear the story. I think all of our listeners would.
Well, I was there the night with Sam, so it's obviously you heard his side of the story. Mine's pretty much the same. Jackson, sorry, my nickname for him, Sam. I lived in a converted dairy bales on 250 acres for about 6 months near Mount Warning. And, just had a few weird things going on up there and decided, I knew Sam was into this sort of stuff. And I thought, you know, who knows, you know, Sam might know more about this sort of stuff than me. And there was just some weird noises going on out in the bush that, you know, didn't really sound like animals. It sounded like strength, you know, something throwing things and timber hitting trees and just things that you wouldn't think an animal would make. So I got Sam up and, we had a bit of a, he was up for three days or so, Jackson, and I think it was the second or third night when we're just sitting in the cabin and heard these like couple of bangs on the side, real loud, like, and we've gone out and it was a couple of lumps of wood. It looked like big lumps of wood had been thrown at the cabin, and while we're in there, also another bang, and it was like an even bigger bang, and this was the water tank I had, a 3,000 gallon water tank. It was like 3/4 full, and it was pushed off the stand. I've never seen anything like that before. And there was a smell about as well at the time. We could smell like a rotten kind of smell when we went outside, and it was quite a nerve-wracking experience, like adrenaline pumping type stuff, you know. And we lost a couple of pigs as well. That wasn't the first time I'd lost livestock, but that night as well, a couple of pigs went missing. Wheeler and Babe, as my niece used to call them, they were gone. It was a real harrowing experience, to be honest.
Well, I know it had to be. It really did. Now, how long ago was that?
That would have been 17 years ago or something, I think. Yeah, about 17 years. Because I've moved away from there since. I'm back on the East Coast now, living in the same town as Jackson. But, yeah, it was a long time ago, but something you don't forget.
Right. So you're talking about maybe around 2010.
Oh, and, 2000. That... Yeah, something like that. It was?
Yep.
Oh, sorry, 17
okay.
years.
Yeah, so maybe about 2010. Well, now,
yeah.
I've got another story, gentlemen, I'd like to share with you. This is this story is in my book, Lizardman, Bigfoot, and Friends. But I don't think we've had anyone buy it in Australia. And I want to share another Lizardman story with you. I have a good friend named Eddie. I'll tell you how I met him. The way I met him promoted finding out about this very important story. What happened was I was at the Carolina Fan Expo. It was a Comic-Con, comic and pop culture convention, near the middle of North Carolina, and I had my Lizard Man poster spread out on the table where I was, and I was talking to people about the Lizard Man Festival, like I enjoy doing when I go to events. And so this fella, this kind of lumberjack-looking dude, his name was Eddie, he came by, he... had a very, very pretty wife. She was dressed up as one of the characters from the Avengers. She looked just like her. And he had his great little kid with him. So he and his little boy stopped by, and he said, "What do you know about Lizard Man?" I said, "Well, I know some things. I'm running the South Carolina Lizard Man Festival, and I always like to talk about Lizard Man." He said, "I'll be right back." So he took his little boy, left the little boy with his wife, who was on the other side of the room. And then he came back. He said, "I want to tell you a story. I've never told this story." I said, "Sure, please do." And he said that back when he was in high school, so with him being 35 years old, that would have been about 15 years ago. So, you know, right around 2000 or 2002, right in that area. He said, "I used to party. Because we were in high school, we used to drink, and I stayed over all the time at a buddy's house. We would go out drinking, and then we would always, because we could always walk back to his house from town, and we wouldn't be drinking and driving, so it was safe, and my parents never found out, so that was good. So what happened is we got to his place, and we snuck up to his room. And so he would always throw me a sleeping bag from his closet, and then he would go to bed on his bed, and sure enough, he was snoring just a few minutes later, and I was sitting there, and the room was spinning. I couldn't go to bed. And then all of a sudden, I heard some banging around. He said, "Now, John," we were on the second floor of his house, so I got up. The room was still spinning. But I got up and looked and pulled the curtains back, and I saw this thing. It looked like best thing I can call it is a small dinosaur. It looked like it was 7 or 8 feet tall. But the moon was full, and I could see it. And the more I looked at it, it was banging around trying to get into his garage. The more I looked at it, it looked more like a big lizard. And I was scared to death, and I couldn't wake him up. He had passed out. So what I did was I locked the door to the bedroom. I stuck a chair up underneath the doorknob, and I got an extra cover, and I was just scared to death, and I passed out. So the next morning, you know, got up, and I was the only one in the room. He had apparently gone downstairs to see his parents. It was Saturday morning. And I could smell bacon, and I knew his mom was cooking breakfast for us. So that was great. And I went over, looked out the window again, and I saw that barn or garage area where I saw that creature the night before. So I went downstairs and drank some coffee with him and talked. And I finally looked at him. I said, did you hear all the noise last night? And they said, well, no, what are you talking about? Eddie looked at him and said, I know you had to hear it. It woke me up. And I saw something that looked like a big lizard. And his buddy, who was, you know, about 18 or 19 like he was, chuckled a little bit and said, oh, you mean you saw the lizard man? Yeah, he's around here really? All the time. He said, I'm surprised this is the first time you have seen him. You've been at my house so much. But like real late at night, 2 or 3 in the morning, we've never come in that late before. And I'm always scared to come in. That's why the friend said, Eddie, you've noticed that I'm never known to walk from town out to my house by myself because I'm scared at night. There's a lizard man out
there.
And Eddie got really distressed. And so he said, and so his brother, he said, no. And he got his coat and he left. He had his car there.
Right.
So they'd walk from their house to town and back. So he got his car and left. He said he has never spoken to his friend. He was really mad that they'd never told him. He was mad that his friend had had him walk back to the house with him. Something could have happened to him. And that's 15 years ago. So that happened in a town called Chester, South Carolina, which is, maybe an hour north of the traditional Bishopville area, where Lizard Man was spotted in 88, 89, and 90. So that's a true story. That's in my book. Eddie is always glad to talk about it. He's a good friend of mine. And so people have seen something out there. Eddie said, I know what I saw. He said, I may have been a little bit drunk, but I know what I saw. When I saw that thing and recognized that it was a lizard, something that looked like a lizard looking around, I got scared to death. It just sobered me right up. So, there are stories. It's hard to get people to tell them because, you know, it's like when I was talking to a lady today. I had stopped by a client's business, and I was talking to them about some stuff, and somehow we started talking about the paranormal. And I ended up saying something like, you know, just talking about ghosts and the fact that I've seen ghosts. And I felt a little bit, I think my face turned red. I said, now you know me and we do really good work, but I'm not ashamed to say that I've seen things that aren't right.
Yep.
And she looked at me and said, now this is great. This is great. She looked at me and said, John, I have too. And I was there for another hour and a half sharing stories with her. And this is a very matter of fact, she's a very nice lady, but you know, not the kind that you would ever expect that you'd spend an hour and a half talking about ghost stories and UFO stories. You would never think about it. And she'd had, of course, an experience with her husband, who she's no longer married with. And she got very upset and started crying. That doesn't happen when you are making something up. And it was a little hard to see someone that had some real stories and didn't mind sharing them. Like Jackson, the two of you guys have shared tonight. I think it's important that we not be afraid to tell what we've seen.
To share, yeah.
I mean, at the risk of sounding a little rude, I mean, shit happens. And there's nothing wrong with talking about it. Not at all.
Exactly. I was chatting with Shane earlier today, and he was telling me about an encounter, like a paranormal encounter with a ghost. Would you like him to be able to tell you about it?
Absolutely. That's why we've got Paranormal Down Under. Hey, Shane, thank you. Tell us your story.
That's it. Well, this one goes probably to the mid-80s. Mid to late 80s. It was like, I was living up near a water supply in town here, and it had an old house on the hill, and it was pretty common. Like, it was pretty common knowledge around. Like, everyone used to talk about how it was haunted. It was actually a place where years ago the convicts were. There was convict gallows up there on the hill, So it had a bit of history. And this they built a big dam in there and they fenced the whole area off so you couldn't actually just walk up to it. So one night me and a bunch of my friends decided we were going to hike the fence and go and check this place out, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we've sort of wandered in there. It was a fair track to get there. We had backpacks and all that sort of stuff. And, yeah, and we sort of, as we got closer, the place was, like, pretty run down. All the windows were smashed and a few of the doors were sort of still open and that. And I think it was a pretty warm night. It was summertime and we kind of got up to the front of the place and the front door just shut out of the blue. It just slammed, like, as though someone had slammed it. And there wasn't a lot of wind or anything at the time, and you know, we were straight away a bit sort of on edge, and took a bit more courage to sort of summon up to go in there, and we sort of went up the stairs and opened the door, and in we went, and we were kind of walking around in there. It was a real eerie feeling in there, and then it was a cold feeling. We all felt it. It was a hot night, but a sort of a real cold breeze came through, you know, and it wasn't strong or anything. It was just sort of wafted through, and it was just out of the blue. Like it was like walking into air conditioning on a summer's day, you know, that kind of feeling out of the blue. And yeah, and then that was kind of sort of got the hairs going on the back of your neck. And from there, we were kind of just wandering around the house, and there was a few like sort of strange noises and things like that. And yeah, it definitely felt like we were in amongst, you know, paranormal sort of presence at the time. You could just feel it. Yeah, it was a eerie kind of feeling, and yeah, scary, but I'm glad we did it because it certainly opened my eyes to a few things.
Yeah, well, you know, that cold air can certainly be indicative of spiritual presences, and I've had that happen to me before at some very strange times, not when I ever expected it, not in any rundown houses or anything. I try to stay out of rundown houses. I've had an experience myself where, and in fact, Jackson, I've got my rundown house story. May I share that with everybody?
Oh, please do, Dr. John. Yeah, that'd be great.
This is a story that I have not, you know, Jackson, I've told you a lot of stories, but I haven't told you this one. And this one's not in a book. And I would like to at least get this on the record. And I can't think of a better place than Paranormal Down Under to talk about it. So this happened about 15 years ago. God, why did everything happen right around 2000? If you think about it, golly, we had a lot of things going on. So anyway,
oh yeah, something about Y2K. Like I've got no idea, my friend.
Something.
Yeah.
So what happened was a couple of my buddies wanted to go ghost hunting because I've always been the guy that goes that you can go ghost hunting with, and things tend to happen. So I said, sure, let's do it. So we went into the northern part of South Carolina, you know, right near the North Carolina border. And my friend, who was our host that evening, well, there were about seven or eight of us. His parents knew a lot of the folks in the county, so there were places we could go. It was okay that we were not trespassing or anything. So we went to, there were these two old houses out down a country road. It was probably around 5:30 or 6 o'clock on a Saturday night. So we're going down there, and he said, John, about 10 years ago, there was a family that lived here, and all of a sudden, that happened one day, they just left. We think they got scared that something must have gone on. I said, wow, well, let's go check it out. So we went into the house. It was probably just like the one Shane talked about. You know, some of the windows were broken. It was kind of a mess, and it looked like they had just picked up and left. And I looked around. I didn't particularly feel anything, and I looked at him. I looked in the kitchen. I opened the pantry door. There was a spoon in the instant coffee that was 10 years old. And I looked at him. I said, you know what? I think these folks were slobs, and they just skipped out because they couldn't pay their rent. And a couple of the guys started looking. I said, yeah, it doesn't seem like it's very haunted in here. I said, yeah. Well, I tell you what. I'm going to go on to the car because I just like hanging out in a dirty old house. And you guys have fun walking around and be careful. So they said, okay, well, we wish you'd stay with us. I mean, there might be a ghost. I said, and there might not. This might just be a dirty old house that a family abandoned, which certainly could be the case. So I walked toward the front door, and I put my hand down where the doorknob would be. There was no doorknob. And I started laughing. I said, God, this is like Last House on the Left. I mean, in a door, there's no doorknob. I said, this is like a bad horror movie. I said, guys, I'm just going to go out the back. I said, you can stay in here all you want in this crummy house. So I go out. So I walk through the living room, through the kitchen, and my buddy yells at me and says, now, John, be careful. Those boards back there on that porch are rotten, and you might fall. You know, something might happen, and you could fall through one of them. So please be careful. I said, oh, sure, no problem. I'm just going to get out of here. So I walk on that old rickety porch. I put my right hand on the doorknob and my left hand on the door frame. The worst thing in the world that could have ever happened, I heard a crack and I fell through that flooring. The boards had broken and I fell through. Now, I was scared. Obviously, I was scared. I'm falling. I don't know how deep the hole is or what. And I tried my best, and I refused to let go of my left hand on that door frame. And I heard a big pop. And I fell about 5 feet down, and I screamed, and I said, I've broken my arm. Help, get me out of here. So my buddy, all of a sudden, he comes running like you wouldn't believe. And he jumps down in that hole that I've fallen in. He gets a piece of wood. He helps me get up out of there. Now, I'm going to tell you what. That is a friend. He didn't even look down to see if there was a snake or a raccoon or anything. He just got down there, and he helped get me out. That's what a friend is.
That's what friends do.
And,
that's what friends do.
Oh, my goodness. You talk about my arm. I have never hurt that badly in my life. And I knew I had pulled it out of joint. I said, you know, something bad. This is terrible. And it was the worst pain I ever endured. We stayed there at his grandfather's house that night, had a few drinks. That didn't stop anything. And the next morning, it hurt worse. I've never hurt that badly in my life. So anyway, I left. And I have this insane fear of doctors. I do. I don't know why. I come from a decent family. My mother was a surgical nurse. We always had the best doctor's care, but I've always been afraid of doctors. So during that week, my arm hurt worse and worse and worse. By the end of 2 weeks after my accident, my left arm, I couldn't move it. It was numb. And I knew, I mean, I said, this could go into gangrene and I could lose my arm. And I was just still too scared to do anything about it. So that's the second weekend after my accident had occurred. We were there were several of us going up to the Ryan Research Institute. Dr. Christine Simmons Moore was doing a weekend course on Paranormal 101. Nice lady from England, got a PhD at University of Edinburgh. So she was there, and everybody, like I was moving my left arm. I had to use my right hand to move my left arm to do anything. And everybody said, John, what does the doctor say? And of course, I lied. I said, oh, the doctor said it'll be fine. It will just take a while to get better. Of course, they all knew that wasn't the case. Your arm shouldn't be completely limp. So anyway, on Sunday morning, we had a noted healer and psychic who was speaking. And we did some remote viewing practice. And everything. And it was a wonderful experience. And she talked about her daughter who had passed away would contact her. Her daughter had told her after she passed away, she would contact her mother through people's right arm. And I remember thinking, golly, I wish she'd contact her through my left arm and heal it because this is terrible. It was numb and it hurt badly. And I couldn't move it. So anyway, we finished that session on remote viewing on Sunday morning. And then there were about 15 of us, the folks in the class and the folks from the Ryan Research Institute. We all went out to eat lunch. We said our goodbyes. We hugged everybody. It was a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Really enjoyed it. Had a good time. So I remember getting in the car, and so I'm in Durham, North Carolina, and I get in the car, and so I'm driving. So I'm about three and a half hours away from the Myrtle Beach area. I remember getting on this thing called Highway 74, and my phone was on my passenger seat. And for some reason, it was like it almost jumped off the passenger seat into the floorboard. I said, oh, that's crazy. So I leaned over and I used my left hand, the one that wouldn't work 4 hours ago. So I'm holding the steering wheel and I'm picking up this phone with my right hand. I said, oh my God, I can move. I've got strength in my left arm. Now it was stiff and sore from not moving it for the last couple of weeks, but it was back. That was not normal, not normal at all. And so by the end of that week, I had the strength back. I had all my movement back. I was even able to go out and hit some golf balls. And I knew something very special had happened to me. And so I had, I guess, the weekend of paranormal work and activity there at the Ryan Research Institute somehow got my arm back in shape. Now, a month later, I was very curious to see what lingering damage there might be. So there was a chiropractor who was, about a half a mile from where I worked. And so I went in there and I said, I'd had some problems with my left arm. And she said, all right, well, let's take some x-rays of both your shoulders just to see what's going on. And so she took them and I waited about 30 minutes. They developed the x-rays and she called me into her office and we looked at them. She said, well, I don't know what you're feeling, but your arms, your shoulders are just fine. She said, your right shoulder has some calcium deposits on it, which was the wrong one. She said, but your left shoulder is just fine. I said, well, ma'am, let me tell you the story. So I told her the story of exactly what had happened. She said, well, that couldn't possibly have happened, because had it happened, your rotator cuff would have been destroyed and there would have been lingering damage and we would have seen it right here on the x-ray. The only thing is she believed me because she was also a spiritual healer. She said, I've seen this happen to people, that all of a sudden they get healed and they don't know what happens. She said, I've known people that have been cured, that have had incurable cancer, and then within 2 days they're cured. She said, it just happens. So just be thankful and try to help other people as much as you can. So I've had a miracle healing. And what was interesting is I never felt it. I never felt the miracle healing. It just happened. And I guess when the phone, I guess, kind of flew off. When the phone kind of flew off the passenger seat into the floorboard, it was my something's way of saying, hey, let me let you know that your arm's better. And it was. I was shocked. And that happened. It truly happened. And I can't change the story. So I guess we've got that one on record now, and I'm glad, and I'm glad too, because, we all have our experiences. I don't think that once I've talked to someone, I don't think there's anyone that hasn't had a ghost story or a healing story or a UFO story or a spooky story. I don't think there's anyone that I've ever met that doesn't. And even the most staunch people that say, no, none of that's for real. You keep talking to them long enough, they've got a story. They just don't like to talk about it.
Definitely. I'd like to relate something to you on the paranormal. Here's a story for you, Dr. John. I've been in touch with Dean Koontz. I'm sure you know of Dean Koontz, the author.
Absolutely, I do.
I've been in conversation with him for a circumstance that happened to me. He wrote a book called From the Corner of His Eye, which is about a young boy called Bartholomew that knows about all the way that things are. I don't want to be a spoiler, so I won't tell anyone what the story's about, but please do read it. Basically, My mother died 10 days before my 23rd birthday. And on the actual day of my 23rd birthday, a present turned up from my mother that was a book from Dean. And it was about a young boy called Barty, and the book's called From the Corner of His Eye. Please look it up. And it talks about all the way that things are. And this book gave me so much solace in the loss of my mum, so much so that it prompted me to contact Dean, and he actually wrote back and sent me a couple of extra books, and like that was just completely out of the ordinary. That was really strange. And when you talk about remote sight, like, you know, remote vision, where you, he has another book about that too. It's called Soul Survivor, where there's a lot of remote viewing and where people can control things from just being a tiny room. They can take control of people's minds. They can manipulate basically anything with a psychic touch. And I believe in all that sort of thing. I've met many psychics in my life, and I can't disclaim them at all. Like, I'm not here in Australia. It's, yeah, there's just so much more out there that people just don't want to try and understand or even listen to, if they just open their minds. Like what Jen was saying on her show last night, we only use like so many bytes of our memory.
Yeah.
There's so much more of our memory that we can open, you know, so much more that we can expand and explore and learn more. Like, it's, I don't know, I just sort of feel a bit underwhelmed. You know, I try to expand my mind as much as I can, but, you know, knowing that there's so much more potential out there to be able to do with my mind, like psychically, telepathically, telekinesis, like all those sort of things. It's like we used to be able to have those sort of things. And I don't know what's happened to the human mind. Maybe it might be technology even, you know. But we need to explore more of our mind, expand it, and learn what we used to be able to do. And, yeah, that's basically all I've got to say on that.
Well, I mean, you're very true. I mean, you know, that's something that I've learned. I think... the real turning point in my life, if I may, God, I feel like we're all sharing lots of stories, and I think that's great. But let me tell you what happened to me is I used to be a college professor, and then I got very, very tired of it. So I had some life insurance, and the whole point of that was you go in, you talk to people, and you see what their needs are and all that. And it turns out every time I would go speak to either a couple or a lady, and they were all usually, if you're selling life insurance, you know, the folks are in their 50s, 60s, or 70s. I would always get in a conversation about their departed loved ones. I don't know what happened. It's like there must just be a flag that I carry that say it's okay to talk about your deceased loved one with me. And there was this lady, she was here in the Myrtle Beach area. And she said, you know, I need to get some more life insurance because I remember when my dad passed away, we just didn't have enough. And I can't do that to my family. And I'm going to get some more from you. And, you know, John, this is the lady talking to me. She said, you know, John, I remember it was a couple of years ago, right after my dad died. It was a couple months. And I was standing in the kitchen. And I was just leaning over the counter. And I was thinking, Daddy, I miss you so much. I love you so much, and I miss you. And she said, I heard a voice. It was his. It said, honey, don't worry. I'm watching you. I'm watching over you. I'm just right over here. You can't see me, but I'm just right over here. Now, a true chill went up and down my spine, and it just did right now. Because this is not a lady that would just, you know, she was a very practical lady. In fact, she was pretty, and I was surprised that she decided that she needed some life insurance, some health insurance. So anyway, it was a very telling story. Her father said, "Honey, I'm just right over here. You can't see me. I'm here watching over you."
That's cryptic.
What does that say? That says
very cryptic. Yeah.
That he's in another dimension, but he's watching her.
That's it.
For her not to worry. Just,
yep.
And that kind of changed. I'd always liked the paranormal. I always thought it was fun. I liked the stories and everything. But it got real serious for me after that because she wouldn't have told me that one if it wasn't true. So that's when I realized that, well, maybe all of our relatives are watching us. And we are being not necessarily judged, but, you know, we're on, we're out there for everyone to see in another dimension. And
most definitely, I was just going to say, like, I believe in past lives as well. When I first started to talk, my father was a fighter pilot in World War II, and when I first started to talk, I started to talk about when I used to be here before. I described that I was a fighter pilot, like what he was, and that I had to jump out of my plane, deploy my parachute, and I explained what the freefall felt like and the parachute deploying and everything, and my father got goosebumps. I was only 3, and I remember him telling me later that he got goosebumps because he said there's no way that I could have explained it with as much detail as I did if I hadn't experienced it myself, and I was only 3. So I completely believe in past lives and everything else as well like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of a natural, but it was, as I said, it was interesting when she told me that, and I believed her. And that's when I realized that, yeah, it's all for real.
Definitely.
This was after my miracle healing. You know, I still wasn't exactly the most believing. It was all I was, but not to that extent. And that's why I enjoy doing what I do. That's why I host Bigfoot conferences. That's why I do what I do, because I really enjoy it. And I just have this knowing feeling out there. And we don't need to be afraid of it. It's just there for us to believe. And once we're around folks that can tell us things like that, then, you know, then it's all over. And by the way, I will announce that if you go to scarycast.com, I put a picture and a link to that book, Dean Koontz, From the Corner of His Eye. So if anyone is interested and wants to get a copy, just go to scarycast.com, and it says click here for the show, and then right underneath it is the a picture of the cover of the Dean Koontz book. So you can get it and enjoy it. Like Jackson did. So yeah, that's great. Now, does Sean, is Sean still there?
Sorry, Shane's he had to leave. He had to go to work. But he'll be definitely on next week. He'll definitely be on next week.
Love to have him. I certainly enjoyed his stories, and I think they're very interesting.
Yep.
And they're things that, that a lot of people can relate to. So I tell you what, Jackson, it's been a lot of fun. Do you have any more stories or any other news you'd like to share with us before we close down for this week of Paranormal Down Under?
Okay, any other news? All I'd like to basically say is that please stay tuned on Scarycast for Bigfoot and Company and all of the other shows that Dr. John does, because they're brilliant. And please listen in to the next paranormal show Down Under. That'd be lovely. That'd be great.
Right. And we will announce, you and I will talk, and we'll see when we have our guests lined up for next week. And I'll make an announcement on Facebook on Paranormal Down Under so that everybody can come listen and have a good time. And so it's been a blast, Jackson, as always. Thank you so much.
It sure has.
For being Yeah, we had a great time, and we'll keep talking because we've got great stories. So on behalf of myself, on behalf of Jackson. Have a great paranormal week down under. And we'll talk to you next week with some more great stories, news, and exciting things. Jackson, have a good one.
Yep, you have a good one too. And I'm sending all my best from me and everyone from down under to all you great people in America.
Well, thank you very much. We certainly appreciate it. And you guys take care. Bye-bye.
You take care as well. Okay, bye-bye. People in America and around the world. I think you're too
absolutely
much listening in.
And it won't be long until I think the British lady has abandoned us, Jackson. I'm having to call her back up so that she can end our show. Maybe she's, you know what, she might have seen a ghost. And so she might have run away from us. Yeah, she might have seen a ghost, who knows?
Jerry, I probably should have mentioned Britain and Scandinavia and Norway as well instead of just America.
Yeah, well, that's okay. It's all good. Let's see if I can cast a spell and find the British lady. I found the British lady. There she is. Everybody have a good one.
Well, that she doesn't like me.
She must not like you. She must not like me. This is crazy.
Well, she probably doesn't like me because I'm a convict from her.
Okay. Well, you have a good one, okay?
Yeah, you have